Well, maybe I'll try to explain. It's really kind of a complex thing, how this all came to be. So it begins with the editorial that I wrote in the Daily News on December 31st. I included in that editorial information about charges of heresy brought by Moorcraft's denomination against a group of four ministers, Doug Wilson, Steve Wilkins, and two other ministers. As I explained, there was a resolution that was then posted on their website, dated June 22, 2002, that said that they should be removed from their respective churches for heresy unless they repent. The heresy charges were dozens of theological errors that were totally inscrutable to me. I had no idea what they were. Anyway, on January 8th, Wilson responded in the Daily News with an editorial of his own. He claimed in that editorial that I had it all wrong. Wilson wrote that Moorcraft's denomination is a, quote, hotbed of neo-Confederate thinking, and they were angry against an article against displaying the Confederate flag that was published in Wilson's magazine, Credenda Agenda. Well, somebody, not me, since I never met, spoke with, or wrote to Moorcraft, sent Wilson's editorial to Moorcraft. And Moorcraft wrote the letter to the editor to set the record straight. What Moorcraft said in the letter was that the heresy charge against Wilson, Wilkins, and two other ministers had nothing to do with the Confederate flag. The four men were charged as heretics for reasons completely divorced from that article or the issue of the neo-Confederacy. If you want to read the article that they were describing, that Wilson brought up about the Confederate flag, it's about 400 words, it's a short diatribe, and as Moorcraft described it accurately, it's quote, self-righteous displays of the Confederate flag is what the article is campaigning against. It's not an attack on the neo-Confederate movement. Anyway, I think that explains why Moorcraft wrote what he did. He wanted to set the record straight.
Okay, great. The next question, the caller left the question, and I have it here. And it's a nice segue. Can you define neo-Confederate? That's the question. And then it's to you, Bill.
Okay. With some difficulty, I can define neo-Confederate. The problem is that it was brand new to me as of a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I didn't know these people existed, and I didn't know they had these kind of beliefs. But since that time, I've learned quite a bit about what neo-Confederates are and what they do. Basically, it's a movement that began about 10 years ago in the South. And it's originally based upon a kind of a redneck power, a cultural support group, but it's changed it's modified itself through time and become more radical. The information that I'm citing comes from primarily Mark Potok, who's the editor of the intelligence reporter from the Southern Poverty Law Center. And he describes neo-Confederate groups, and specifically Steve Wilkins, and specifically the League of the South, that Steve Wilkins was a founder of, has been a director of for 10 years, and is now listed as a senior advisor to the board. He calls that group specifically an active hate group. I spoke with Mark Pitkavage from the Anti-Defamation League, and he basically shares the same opinion about the threat of the neo-Confederate groups. Do we have any more time?
About 30 seconds.
Their goal is very similar to what I described as the goal of the leadership of the Christ Church in establishing and creating a theocratic state where the political and religious power both reside within this to the same people. They have a very strong political agenda with religious overtones, just as we find in Christchurch. That's why their alliance is such a natural.
I would like to respond in a couple of ways. Number one, I think it's only fair to point out that someone who 2 weeks ago didn't know what a neo-Confederate was ought not to be on the radio talking about it. You can't research these issues in any kind of depth at all. You can't do justice to what's going on with that level of understanding. I'm not a Reconstructionist. I'm not a neo-Confederate. I would define a neo-Confederate thusly. A neo-Confederate is someone who wants to mobilize people in the South to secede again. He wants to generate cultural and political independence from the United States, and his tactic is political organization, cultural mobilization, and that sort of thing. And one of the things that they want, the agenda number one, is they want to fight a lot of the culture wars that we're involved in the United States currently, that I'm also involved in, but they want to use a particular tactic. I'm not a neo-Confederate because I think that that tactic is hopelessly doomed. I don't believe that that's what we ought to be doing. I'm not fighting for prayer in the public schools. I'm not fighting to have Idaho secede from the Union or any other state to secede from the Union. I don't hold to those tactics or beliefs. So consequently, I'm not a neo-Confederate. Now, what this means is that, so someone says, well, if you're not a neo-Confederate, then why all the hubbub? Number one, I've asked that question myself more than once. Why all the hubbub? Why am I being attacked for things that I don't hold? I'm not a neo-Confederate. I have made plain in print that if I had been alive in 1861, and if I'd been alive in the South, I do believe that the South was right on the constitutional issues that led up to the war. But I believe also that a new order was established in 1865 at Appomattox, and Christians, like everyone else, we have to play cards with the hand that we're dealt. So we're dealing with the situation that's in front of us now. So consequently, I think it's crazy to go to the Southern Poverty Law Center, which they tend to hyperventilate about some such things. They even, their website identified the U of I as the sponsor of this conference that we were sponsoring. They don't always get their facts right. And the Southern Poverty Law Center has their problems. Just to simply say that they identify something as a hate group and Doug Wilson knows someone who's associated with this group that somebody else says is a hate group, that you require... you should require more than that. Our ministry, we've in print and repeatedly verbally, we have preached, taught, published against racism. We have repeatedly attacked conservative Christians who are trying to find a political solution to the mess we're in. We believe at Christ Church in resolving these problems that do afflict us in a very public way in our culture and in our society by means of worship, liturgy, and evangelism, not by political agitation, not by running candidates for city council, not by trying to take over Congress. H.L. Mencken said trying to reform Congress by sending good men there is like trying to reform prostitution by staffing brothels with virgins. The system is structured against us, and we need to pursue another way of trying to reform our culture. Our faith is public. Our proclamation of Christ is public. Our evangelism is public. Our worship is public. That's all true, and it all has public ramifications. But we are not trying to impose biblical law from the top down. We simply are not doing it. And not only are we not doing that, but we've consistently taught against it and published against it, which more than 2 weeks of research would have discovered.
Great, thank you. Our next question comes from a caller.
Hello. kind of a quick statement. Of course, we all know that words are left up to interpretation of individuals. We've argued for years about what exactly the founders of our Constitution meant, let alone we argue about what the people who wrote the Bible could have meant. And over time, I mean, our Constitution is only a couple hundred years old. You're looking at the Bible being thousands of years old. And so as a preacher, one would attest that he knows the interpretation of these words in the Bible. And so now I'm going to bring forth a three-part question. Okay, now, I want to ask Doug Wilson personally if his faith believes that God's law, which would be, of course, his interpretation of God's law, supersedes constitutional law or democratic law. Second part of the question is, who enforces God's law? Is it up to God, or is it up to Doug Church and his disciples? Third part of the questions is, does Doug Wilson and does he preach or does he fundamentally believe in nonviolence? Is that part of his biblical preachings, that violence should not be there, even if he feels it's God's law? Or does he feel that God's law is necessarily nonviolent? Those are my three questions.
Okay, thank you, Matt.
All right. Those are great, great questions. Number one, does God's law outrank the will of the people or democracy or constitutional law? And the answer to that is absolutely. God being who he is, the maker of heaven and earth, outranks us all. And a simple thought experiment should show how necessary this is. Why was Hitler wrong? Hitler was evil and wrong. Stalin was evil and wrong, not because they violated the laws of the state of Illinois. They were not under the laws of the state of Illinois. In Germany, Hitler was the law. Now the question is, what was above him when he was at the peak of his power, when he was murdering Jews, when he was undertaking the Holocaust, which some people apparently deny. I've heard rumbles about that, but that was another dead cat that was thrown at us in the course of this controversy. But when Hitler was undertaking that Holocaust, when he was killing Jews, what was over him? What was above him? Well, John Lennon asked us to imagine only sky. Imagine there's no heavens. You know, you can do it. Well, above Buchenwald, above Auschwitz, what is there? Only sky? Well, I believe that there's a God who judges the living and the dead. I believe that every man will reap what he sows. I believe that's true of Hitler and Stalin and everyone here in Moscow. So I believe, yes. And it doesn't matter. You won't be able, at the day of judgment, you won't be able to stand before the throne of God and say, well, I killed Jews because it was okay in the Constitution, or we killed the unborn because the Constitution allowed it. That won't fly. God will not be impressed. So yes, God's law supersedes anything we might cook up. Who enforces it? Well, every society has a god. Every society is a religious society, and the people who are in power in that society are the ones who make the decisions concerning enforcement. We currently have people who enforce the laws of a particular deity, a particular voice, and there would be, it'd be no different if you had a Christian republic or a society configured differently. You'd have people who would be responsible to discharge the laws that existed, and they would be held accountable by God for what they did or didn't do. And then the last question is, I think the last part of the question was, am I a pacifist? No, I am not. I'm not a pacifist. I believe that there are some situations where violence is justified and some situations where violence and self-defense and so forth is demanded. But just a quick litmus test, out of all of America's wars, from the War for Independence down to the present, I think maybe two of them were justified on biblical principles.
Right. It was supposed to, Doug, but would you like to respond?
I guess what I'd respond in this whole issue of what is God's law and the standards by which people live is to repeat a question that Doug Wilson repeatedly posed to Moscow Vision 2020, our community listserv, when he was a subscriber. And that question is, by what standard? He would regularly ask that kind of question about God's law and how, you know, by what standard do we, me, you, anybody, do anything, make any choices? He posed that question repeatedly, and I realized that it really is a trick question, because what happens is there's only one answer that he's willing to accept. The only answer he's willing to accept is that the standard, the applicable standard, is the standard based on his interpretation of Christianity in the Bible. The fact that 99%, 99.9% of the world's humanity would disagree with him, and the fact that there are dozens and hundreds of Christian organizations and denominations that would disagree with him, never stopped him from saying that's the standard. So that's why I think that the issues of religious standards really are quite irrelevant to our discussion. What we're talking about is the political agenda that Christ Church has and the way the Christ Church is manifesting those beliefs. I think it's perfectly all right for Doug Wilson to have his political, to have his religious beliefs as well as his political beliefs. But as they start manifesting themselves in our society and start affecting our future, I think we have an obligation and a right to speak out.